Hey everyone, this is Rich. Sorry to interrupt the beginning of the show, I know you want to get to it, but I've got to tell you that we've now got new t-shirts available in our store. We've got a store back again. Just go to simplysyndicated.com/store and you can get the new t-shirt design that we've had done. It looks incredible, so go and check that out now. And if you're a Simply Everything subscriber, there's a special store just for you people where you can get everything even cheaper. And don't forget, if you sign up to Simply Everything now, you get a week's free trial and you can hear all the stuff we've done in the past, all the previous episodes of movies you should see, all the new episodes of Make It So and Shaken Not Stirred as well. There's lots of premium content there just for you subscribers. So go and visit simplysyndicated.com/everything and you'll see a page that tells you all about it. Okay, enjoy the show. Right, here we go. Hello, welcome to Movies You Should See. This week we're discussing the, 2009 classic Drag Me to Hell by Sam Raimi, starring Alison Lohman and Justin Long. I hate films with Justin Long in, but we'll go with this.
He is a uniquely gormless looking man.
He's not good, is he? I mean, do you ever think, oh, hey, Justin Long was in that film? I must go and see that.
He's the like same person. He's the same character in every film as well.
And that character is a Mac.
Yeah.
He's a Mac in this film. He's a Mac in every film. And there's someone in Big Brother at the moment who reminds me of him, who I loathe. And so I'm kind of got this subconscious hatred of Justin Long that isn't his fault.
He's probably a really nice guy.
I bet he is, you know. I bet if we met him, he'd be ever so polite and really friendly. And yet, there he is in films. What can we do? So, joining us today, we have Emma.
Hello.
Hello, Emma. And we have Laura.
Hello.
And we have Boz.
Hello.
Hello.
Not sure I'm qualified to be talking about a movie such as this, but I'll give it a go.
Do you not do a horror movie podcast?
Oh, yeah, I do. Sorry.
I think he was being ironical there, Rich.
I was going to let you plug it, you know. You don't have to creep it in.
Sorry.
It's fine. Do you want to tell everybody what it's called and stuff?
Oh, well, you didn't want to do that at the end, but I'll take any opportunity to plug. I'm a co-host of a lovely little show called The Little Pod of Horrors. Which you can find on iTunes, and it's fun.
Good.
Even if you don't like horror films, give it a listen because we're a gateway. We can help you appreciate some of the genre, even if you avoided it like the plague before. We like to think. Anyway.
See, horror is a genre that I historically have not liked, but this is a good one.
It is.
This is genuinely a good horror film, in my opinion. And the two words that make that be true for me are Sam Raimi.
Yes.
Because I think if anyone knows how to make a horror film, Sam Raimi knows how to make a horror film. And this is a good example of one. So, go ahead.
I was going to chip in, but I don't want to break the rules because I know there's like structure and stuff now, and yeah. I don't want to derail it. So
I was just going to start with that. Do you want to kick it off? Do you want to? Let's give me an opening statement, Boz, about Drag Me to Hell, but don't go on too long.
Okay.
I was thinking about putting a time limit on it or something, but I haven't thought that through enough to do it now.
Have the countdown. Down to it.
I have that as a sound effect, actually. If I had my iPad with me, I could have done that. But...
Drag Me to Hell is the thing I had been waiting for years, but I didn't realise it until I saw it. I am a big fan of Sam Raimi's earlier work, I should add. He didn't do a bad job of Spider-Man, but I was very, very happy to see him return to the genre that made him as big as he is now. And... going back to my podcast, if you've ever listened to it, it is a bone of much contention because Gordon actually cannot stand Evil Dead and especially cannot stand Evil Dead 2, and is like an ongoing argument between the two of us. I say they're two of the best horror movies ever made. And Drag Me to Hell was just a return to form I just was not expecting. It had that whole sort of slapstick comedy side to it, as long along with the scares, the jumps, it just had everything I was expecting. And I walk into films like this with such apprehension, as I did with the Evil Dead remake, actually, just going, please don't screw this up, please don't screw this up. And if I could walk out happy from a horror movie, then that's just the best thing. So I am a big fan of this movie. I'll leave it there.
Awesome. Emma, do you want to go next?
Sure, yeah. Again, a sort of, I'm sort of a semi-horror fan. I wouldn't say I'm sort of as big a horror fan as Boz is, but I enjoy my horror. So, again, I mean, whereas Boz is a big fan of the Evil Dead, I'm fairly lukewarm on them. I can sort of take them or leave them. And the last time I watched them, you know, I was like, they're fine, but, you know, not quite what. It's not going to be my favourite thing ever, and if I never see them again, you know, I'm probably going to be okay with it. So when I came around to this one, I was, again, sort of fairly sceptical. I mean, as well, I only came to this the other day, so it was one of those ones of like, oh, you know, I'll watch it sort of sooner rather than later, and finally getting round to it, I was pretty sceptical as well, because this was a 15 or a PG-13, I believe, when it came out. So when it's going to be rated like that, you sort of think, oh, is it going to be kind of dumbed down? You know, are they going to pull their punches? But no, this one really kind of goes all out, you know, to a surprising point. I mean, and it's one's where it's quite effectual. I think it stays with you. Yeah, I think it's a great horror movie. And, you know, it's sort of kicking the door open again for these kind of over the top horror comedies. Yep, so that's my take on it.
Awesome. Laura, now, I saved you to last because you've literally just finished watching the film.
Yeah.
So, come on
okay.
then.
Okay.
I hear reservations.
I thought it was quite predictable, and I guessed big bits of the plot as we were going along before they happened. But it was entertaining and it was quite funny and the jumpy bits were pretty jumpy and it was okay. It wasn't my favourite horror film by any stretch of the imagination, but then I'm not really, this sort of horror film isn't really my cup of tea anyway. So I am prepared to be talked around on this one, I think.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's see if we can do that then. I'll tell you why I like this film. I agree with you in that it's a great mix of horror and comedy and all kinds of different elements that make up this great little movie. There are so many horror films, especially recently, where the point of the film is every single person is going to die in an increasingly gross way. And that's it. That's your film. It's just watch several people die in a gross way. Whereas what Sam Raimi does is actually makes a good film with a story and a plot. And it's good. He's just so far away from what other people are doing. It makes it much better. Because everyone else seems to be making Cabin Fever and other things like that.
Oh, Cabin Fever's fantastic.
See, I preferred Cabin Fever.
I must confess, I'm having a go at it. I haven't actually seen Cabin Fever. Well, I have like seen Cabin Fever 2.
Oh, Cabin Fever 2 is nothing. No, that's not the same movie at all. No, you need to see the first one, Rich.
Right.
You'll never shave your legs again, I'm telling you.
I've heard about that bit. And I don't want to be put off shaving my legs is the problem. I like it silky smooth.
I think the reason Cabin Fever gets lumped in with all that is because it was sort of Eli Roth's sort of early outing. And I tell you, if you want a laugh, you need to get that and watch the making of and the interviews with him and just see the passion that that guy has for the genre. And it is infectious. He went on to make things like Hostel, and which is a very divisive film. But it to me, is one of the better horror films made. Because of the love that sort of goes into it. And, that's a whole other subject.
But the thing with Eli Roth is that I get the impression that he is on some level completely fucked up as an individual. He's a man with issues that he needs to deal with. And he deals with them by putting them on film. And maybe if he didn't get to make films, he'd just kill lots of people.
No, that's why you've got to watch these making-ofs. You'll see what makes him tick, because it is a love of the genre that makes him do it, and he just wanted to push the boundaries. I mean, yeah, you've got to be a little, I don't know, free in the brain to be able to come up with some of those scenes, but, you know, I don't think he's doing it as a, you know, a way to stop him committing mass murder. I think, because if that was the case, because I enjoy watching the products of people like Sam Raimi and Eli Roth and people like that, it's like, well, surely that could say the same about me, and I have no murderous intentions, I assure you.
No, I think it's with those guys, I think, like you're saying, Boz, it's just these guys who sort of came up watching those effects-driven old movies, like the old Tom Savini-style effects, and basically bringing that passion to an era where we've got top-level SFX to use. Mm. So that's why, you know, they want to say, right, this is what we loved, and now we want to push that boundary further of giving you something like at the edge of extremity, or sort of like, I'm going to give you the most effed up 15 rated horror film you've ever seen, and that's why you had Drag Me to Hell. I'm going to make one of the most extreme horror films you've ever seen, hence why we have Hostel. So yeah.
And I think the 15 rating is actually quite key, because it reminds you how much you can get away with in a 15, actually.
Yeah, an incredible amount.
Exactly. And the thing that doesn't push a rating of a movie up is how shit scary it is. And there are many, many times I overlook a film because of its 15 rating, and I'm having to recheck myself and go, no, I am going to watch this. Especially if it's in this particular subgenre of horror, in that it's the spooky, scary, jumpy kind of side of things. Everything that's come out recently at the cinema that's been of that ilk, some of which have been brilliant. I mentioned The Conjuring, which I saw recently. I loved it. 15 rated. Really scary movie.
I won't see that. I saw that the poster's got a bloody mannequin on it. I'm out. Fuck that.
But is it scary because it's sort of spooky, weird, rather than sort of gory, bloody?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
That's it. That's the line.
Yeah.
So I think spooky, weird is so much more scary. I mean, my favourite horror film is The Omen. And, you know, there's in terms of gore, it's very low. But, I mean, every time that, spoilers, they dig up the grave and the bloody jackal body is in there, I shit myself every time, and then the Rottweilers appear in the graveyard. Fuck that. It terrifies me. But it's but it's all in your brain, you know?
Yeah, but that's what makes it scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all in your head. When you can see it, the worst horror movies are the ones where, you know, it's all there in front of you, shown in, you know, gory detail. Yeah, it's a bit disgusting or it's a bit gory, but it's not as scary as something that you can't see, but you know is there.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, the 15 rated ghosty movies scare me.
Yeah.
The gory extreme splatter. Okay, call them splatter movies. If you've and was listened to the show, they'll know we do not endorse the term torture porn, because I don't recognise it as a genre. So we call those splatter movies, and it's a different feeling you get watching a splatter movie. It repulses you. It puts you on edge, but in a different way.
Yeah.
The Woman in Black, for example, made me jump like 3 times, and it was all horror by numbers. And this is the same with Drag Me to Hell. There's a lot of horror by numbers. Like you say, it's quite predictable, but it's not predictable. Oh, I saw that coming. It's like, oh, this is going to happen. Yeah, it did. That was good. You know, and there were some bits I didn't see coming still, even in this. So it's that there's very different ways to approach horror, and it depends who you are as to what you enjoy as well.
Now, I did try and watch Woman in Black, and after about 30 minutes of sitting there going, but that's Daniel Radcliffe, I turned it off. It might have been a good film that followed, but that was Daniel Radcliffe, and I was supposed to believe that he had like kids and stuff and was a grown-up, and that was where it fell down with for me. I would have gotten all the way through it had they put any other actor on the planet in that role.
What about Justin Long?
Even Justin Long.
He's so vanilla. He's like one of those people who, as soon as they're off the screen, I forget they're in it. And then as soon as they're back on, it's like, oh, Justin Long's in this movie.
What has he done? Let's talk about these actors, hang on, because I've got to go through bloody Wikipedia, which is not as well
I did associate him with sort of films like, I don't know, that American Pie genre of film, the teen road movie with boobs in.
Let's see what he did. He started with Galaxy Quest.
He's done
Who was he in that?
He's the kid who helps them with the plans of the ship at the end.
Oh, is he the one who says, oh, I knew it was real?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that him?
Yes.
He was in Jeepers Creepers, which I've never seen, but there's a horror film for you. And Jeepers Creepers 2.
Oh, guff.
Yes. He's good in Jeepers Creepers. Actually.
I thought he was good in Dodgeball.
Yeah.
And given that, the next one of his stuff that I've seen, Idiocracy. I don't remember him in that at all. Live Free or Die Hard. That was a piece of shit.
That's rubbish.
Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh, God.
Strange Wilderness. Turn that off. Oh, Strange Wilderness was a film that was so not funny, I turned it off literally about 3 minutes before it finished. I didn't even care enough to see how it ended.
But you cared enough to get 3 minutes to the end.
Yeah, it was. Oh. It's never happened before, but it was. You suddenly realise, hang on, I don't have to watch this, and you just pick up the remote and turn it off. I had the same experience with John Carter of Mars. Like an hour in.
Completion would haunt me. Yeah. If I'm already that far in, I have to keep going.
Yeah, I'm a completist.
Me too.
I mean, you keep me up at night. I couldn't not do it.
I mean, I'm exactly the same, and really I'm pointing it out as to say that's how bad the film was.
Yeah, but you do realise that now I'm going to have to watch it all the way to the end for you, just so that I can sleep tonight.
I'll look forward to that. Write me a summary of the end and email it over. I'd appreciate that.
An email he'll never read. Text it to him.
Yeah.
It is slightly worrying that that's the thing that's going to stop you sleeping tonight and that Drag Me to Hell isn't the thing.
Actually, you're right. I am not going to sleep tonight at all. I live in a house that's over 100 years old that creaks and bumps and... Yeah, I'm getting shivers just talking about it.
Oh, mate.
Should we sort of synopsisize this or something?
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually. Let's synopsize. You made up a word and you threw me off with that. It's what happened.
Sorry.
That's a Tara Reid-esque word, that is. That's like smizing.
Yeah.
I think the person who most recently watched it should get the honour.
Okay. Well, I don't know how long before, but it sort of starts off with a bit where a couple take their son to a medium. And he's got a silver necklace that he's stolen from gypsies, I think.
Yeah.
And he's being haunted by weird-looking, horrible, shadowy things. So the medium takes him in. It all goes tits up, basically, and he gets dragged into hell. Then it cuts to present day, and we see... I don't know what her name is in this. What's her name in it?
Hang on.
Christine Brown.
Christine Brown.
Oh, yeah, I've got Wikipedia back up now. Christine Brown, who works in a bank, and she's trying to get a promotion over a horrible co-worker. And her boss basically tells her that she's got to sort of take some responsibility and make some tough decisions, otherwise she won't get the job as system manager. And a horrible-looking gypsy woman comes in, asks for a loan, an extension on her loan, which she's already had two, I think, so that she can pay her mortgage. And when Christine decides to turn her down to sort of take a stand and try and get this new job, the gypsy curses her. Oh, well, no, actually, she doesn't. She attacks her, first of all, doesn't she?
Yeah.
And then it's a little bit later on at night when she's walking to her car. Surprise, surprise, there's no one in the car park. Yeah. It's all dark. And there's the weird gypsy woman who seems to refuse to die and attacks her in the car. And right at the end of this horrific long fight, she rips off a button off the Christine's coat and curses her. And then do you want me to carry on and spoil it, or do you want me to sort of leave it at that?
You know, that's pretty much the gist of the entire film, isn't it? She's cursed by a gypsy because she pisses off a gypsy. And it's really a film about her realizing that she is cursed and trying to get rid of the curse at all costs.
Yeah.
To be fair, she did staple her eye closed.
Oh, that was horrible, that bit.
Ooh, that was grim.
That was just brilliant.
No, do you know the worst bit about that entire fight was when that woman's teeth came out.
Yes.
And then she attacks her and sucks that woman's, the chin. Oh, it's just, oh.
She gums her bottom jaw. That's just brilliant.
So vicious.
Oh.
But they do use the age-old technique of sort of normal volume, very, very loud! And actually the first scare is in the bank where the woman's been, the old gypsy's being dragged away by security, and she turns around and tries to attack her. And the way she screams at her, and I think there's actually some vocal effect on that to make it sound sort of otherworldly, but that really makes me jump that bit, because I always forget it's there. Because you think, oh, nothing scary happens yet. I know nothing scary happens till like the car park, and that like super made me jump.
I am totally immune to the very quiet, very quiet, very loud effect because I record podcasts with Michael Storer, so I am used to this. It's just a part of my life, really. You don't make me jump with loud noises anymore. Not anymore. Where were we? We were slagging off Justin Long for a bit, but realizing he's not actually all that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally forgot he was in Jeepers Creepers, which is one of my favourite horror movies, actually.
Oh, really? I thought that was terrible.
I think it's not one of those ones. It's a fine first one, but the sequel is absolute gash.
It's a sequel. They normally are. But it's the thing with Jeepers Creepers is we didn't know when it came. I saw it at the cinema, and I think it was one of those. It had to come in under the radar, and you had to see it at the cinema. Mm. And not know anything about it. So you didn't know what it was going like. And the first hour of that film plays out like a slasher flick, basically. And the tension they ramp up in that's probably the first 40 minutes of the film, is brilliantly done. It's a really good horror to that point. And a lot of people say, oh, yeah, in the end it goes a bit stupid and it loses its way. And I'm like, well, no, that's like saying the same happened in Dusk Till Dawn. And I love the fact that Dusk Till Dawn turned into a stupid vampire flick halfway through. And it was that same sort of feel, but
I see what you're saying, but I don't think it's anywhere near as good as From Dusk Till Dawn.
No, From Dusk Till Dawn is an awesome film. I see here there's a Jeepers Creepers 3 scheduled.
Oh, for God's sake.
Oh, dear.
Because why stop making it once you've had an idea? Why stop?
Well, didn't stop Saw, did it?
No.
That's why there's 9 Hellraiser films.
And Paranormal Activity.
I 5?
Are they on 5 with that?
Yeah, because it's been delayed. They're releasing it in January. Yeah, they're releasing 5's coming out in January.
Oh.
Yeah, it's been bumped from its October release, which means it's going down the shitter.
Oh, dear.
I did watch the first one and found that one insanely creepy.
I pooed myself. I absolutely wet my pants.
And I haven't seen any of them.
I get so upset with myself when horror films scare me at all because I like to feel high and mighty over the genre anyway and go, oh, well, that didn't scare me. So if I can't genuinely do that, I get annoyed. But second of all, I've been on film sets. I know how they do this. I've been a sound man and I've seen actors acting and stuff. It's all made up. And so if they manage to break through that knowledge and actually scare me, then it's hard for me to criticise it because they've clearly done quite well.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Paranormal Activity movies scare me because I was one of the generation utterly traumatised by Ghostwatch.
Thank
you. So anything with ghosts in shits me up no end because I see Mr. Pipes everywhere.
Don't say that.
If you don't know what I'm talking about.
Don't fucking say that.
Do not look at it.
Right.
For the love of Christ.
I cannot say that word in that context. I can talk about all the plumbing in the bathroom and the pipes involved in the plumbing in the bathroom. That's fine. I can do that. But I cannot say the P word in relation to what was it? What is it?
Ghostwatch.
The single most terrifying thing ever put on television.
It's horrifying. Horrifying.
I'm so gutted I missed it entirely and didn't even know about it.
No, neither did I, boss. Neither did I. But I'm actually quite glad because everything scares me. So this probably would have traumatised me.
I kind of want to find a copy and send it to you, boss, because I don't, you know, I'm so glad that Emma has had the same experience as me with it. I mean,
I'll be interested to see if it can scare me. I really will.
It's horrible. It was horrific.
I don't know how well it's dated. I mean, because it was, what, was it 1990, wasn't it, Ghostwatch? Yeah, because I was 9.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, it traumatised me. It utterly just ruined my brain. I think the fact that I've not yet plucked up the courage to watch it again, 21 years later, I think speaks to how scary that was.
I've tried. I tried watching the end on YouTube or something, and I couldn't get through it.
Mm.
It was 1992, according to Wikipedia. I remember it being earlier. That makes the fact that I slept with the light on for a year after all that bit more embarrassing.
How old would you have been?
14.
Nine. I was 9.
Yeah, I was 9 or 10, young. Yeah.
That is young to be watching that kind of thing.
Maybe. Yeah, well, no, because we didn't realise what it was, because Craig Charles was in it, and I was and still am a huge Red Dwarf fan.
It was Sarah Green. It was Sarah Green of Blue Peter. How was she ever doing
all of this? Is ringing a bell in my head, and it's making me think that maybe I did watch it, and I have buried it somewhere.
Post-traumatic stress,
subconscious. And tonight, I'm going to be a complete mess when I go to bed.
You're going to go and see a bloody hypnotist and recall all your traumatic memories.
Hang on,
it rings a bell.
Emma, I brought up the Wikipedia page for Ghostwatch, and it says, what? A retrospective documentary, Ghostwatch Behind the Curtains, based on the film's lasting impact, was released on DVD in 2013. I have to try and find that DVD.
If you scroll down that Wikipedia page, it claims that some children got PTSD from watching it.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I would count myself amongst that, actually. I was seriously, seriously upset by this.
I've been delivered cheese rolls. Thank you, darling.
God, there is a whole section on psychological effects. My God.
I have to see this.
18-year-old factory worker Martin Denham, who suffered from learning difficulties and had a mental age of 13, committed suicide 5 days after the program aired.
Holy fuck.
The family home had suffered with a faulty central heating system, which had caused the pipes to knock.
Nope.
Denham linked this to the activity in the show, causing great worry. He left a suicide note reading, "If there are ghosts, I will be ... with you always as a ghost."
I don't like it.
What was this program? Was it like...
It was on at Halloween.
Most haunted,
it was
like, type thing.
Yeah, but it was done as a false documentary. But, I mean, remember in 92, nothing like that had ever been on. So everyone thought it was real.
And it was done so well because it was the BBC, so they had Sarah Green presenting it, and Mike Smith was somewhere who was still a thing in 1992. Michael fucking Parkinson was part of it.
Really?
Have you ever? How can you not trust Michael Parkinson? But that night, oh.
Well, because as well, what's frightening about it was it's based on a real life, alleged poltergeist haunting.
Hmm.
As stupid as I am, I've actually listened to some of the tapes of the recording of a bloke trying to call out this poltergeist that was infesting the body of this woman, and it's terrifying.
It really is an upsetting
it's
thing.
So upsetting.
Let's go back to Drag Me to Hell before I remember too much of it and don't sleep
anyway,
again.
I mean, part of the reason that I find this film, the frightening aspects of this film for me, is that I also work in a bank. And although I don't exactly do what Christine does, I live in fear of one day that one customer who I have to tell to get lost, who will curse me and send me to hell.
I won't worry because real life
on your bottom jaw.
Real life gypsies will just smash in, or nick your hubcaps or something like that. I wouldn't worry. To be honest, I find in horror the closer it is to a real life situation, the more frightening it is. And that was what was scary about Ghostwatch, was because it was a normal house on an English street.
Yep.
And it could have been anywhere. Whereas
come back there again.
I know. Whereas Drag Me to Hell was sort of, there's nothing in Drag Me to Hell that is remotely close to my real life. And so I was just totally removed from it. And it I can't say it scared me much.
There were bits of it that were a bit, but it was more jumpy scary than than creepy, scary for most of it. The bits with the shadows past the windows and stuff, things like that always creep me out anyway. Mm. And they're the bits that I'll be thinking of tonight when I go to bed. But the rest of it was, like you say, it's too detached from my life to be anything that will haunt me that much, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be scary for, like, tonight or something, but then you'll be thinking about the film, and then you'll remember there's a part where there's a talking goat, and you go...
Exactly,
We should get into that scene. That's my favourite scene.
Oh, man, when that he hawks up the kitten, that is something else.
Kitten vomit!
I was, me and Chuck just looked at each other like, what the fuck? Wow, that actually happened.
There are a few moments like that. The worst moment for me is when the corpse falls on her and the goo comes out of its mouth.
Yeah,
and
it goes
in her mouth, and it's just I squirmed at that. That was upsetting, that bit. Not Ghostwatch upsetting, but still quite upsetting.
Well, they set that scene up. If you I was watching it, I did it with headphones, and I got to hear the soundtrack much, much better. And from the point she walks into the bank, she's kind of, how can I say, moist? It sounds wrong. But everything she does is like, she's blowing her nose, she takes her teeth out, and they've really overdone that.
Yeah.
And she just, I mean, even when she coughs or talks, there's this kind of phlegmy background to everything she does. It's just gross, even from that point. So that's just like the ultimate payoff of all that build-up, I think, on that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that bit where she coughs in the bank, and from that moment on, I was quite put off my dinner.
Yeah.
And that's it then.
It's just juicy cough.
Oh, man.
I forgot to... You weren't here when we said, Boz, but as we sat down to start watching this, Gath bought me and my dinner, and I sat with my dinner in front of me for most of this, and it took me quite a while to... eat some of it, but not all of it.
But then
I couldn't. Oh, I'm having flashbacks. Sorry.
But the whole sort of seance scene is the bit I really when I saw it at the cinema, I was like, yes, this is Raimi back, because it was so reminiscent of Evil Dead and the kind of levitating scary voices and all this kind of stuff going on, and it was just really well handled. It's completely over the top, and it's completely unbelievable, and that's what tips it over from... It could be a terrible film, because they could have tried too hard. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, this film is very explicitly a B film.
Yes.
Done with like an A-level budget, essentially. Mm. So I think that when you get to that point in the film, if you're sort of into it and you go with it, you're going to love that scene. But I think if you're sort of watching it and you're not being impressed so far, I think the level of kind of silliness it goes to, especially when the guy gets possessed and he's kind of hanging in the air like a bloody marionette, and he's like... And you sort of like, and the goat, as we said, the talking goat, that's either you're either going to go with it and like laugh and be scared by it, or not be scared by it, but like go, oh, something like that. Or if you're, but on the other hand, if you're not into it and you've been like, oh, this has been quite predictable so far, and you're kind of not into the story, that's going to just, it's going to kick you right out of it.
Mm.
I think. And I think you were probably, that is the point I think people would switch it off, if you're in a sort of a, this film's going off in a minute if it doesn't go somewhere. I think that's kind of a dividing point. You know, if you're going to go with it, you're going to love it. If you don't, that's going to switch you off so fast.
I think that was the bit where Gareth turned around to me and said, I've had enough now. And I could see that he was just like, nah.
Done.
Yeah. He also said that you'd have thought that she'd learned to keep her mouth shut, because every time he seemed to look up at the screen, she was either, something was going in or out of her mouth. But yeah, he didn't enjoy it at all, I don't think.
Oh, shame.
Yeah, I don't think it's really his sort of thing.
Another sort of nod to the Evil Dead franchise is the hand beating him up scene is obviously quite iconic, and I found that the hand was replaced by a handkerchief in this movie. Because it's actually the handkerchief distracts her in the first place from the fact that the woman's in the car behind her.
Yeah.
Also, I think
a mind of its own.
So I think as well, what what may sort of you're in or out of the film is how egregious a sin or like how bad a moral choice is what she does. You know, so this was sort of in 09, this is before bankers were the worst scum of the universe.
Yeah.
To everybody, basically. So sort of how you relate to her and think, well, would I have made the same decision or something similar in my job? And does she really deserve what happens to her? And I think in horror films, it's difficult to sort of say, do you sympathise with the protagonist in this and sort of want them to get out with it or... get out of it or beat the baddie, or you know, is this a person that you want to see get their just desserts? And I think I would have liked that to have been a bit of a stronger through line in the movie, but you can't really because then it's not, you're going to lose out on the comedy elements because that scene, the seance scene, is going to stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think you know, it's sort of how you go with that moral choice as well can sort of say, if you sort of say, well, she clearly doesn't deserve this, or yeah, burn in hell, bitch, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, which one are you going to go with?
I don't think they got the balance quite good on that because it's a bit extreme to curse someone to hell for it.
Yeah, it's a bit extreme. I thought it was a bit extreme. Make your mortgage payments, lady, you're magic, surely you can find some money for your loan, god damn it.
And they had let her off twice. I mean, it's not like this was the first time.
I think the main offence actually came from she was on the floor begging and she sort of made it more conscious to everybody in the building that this was happening and made the lady fall over. And I found that was a more egregious bit. But it's like, from her standpoint, Christine's standpoint, it's an accident. She was just trying to, you know, this is weird, get away kind of thing. And this is like, to the woman, it was the ultimate shame. You shamed me. It.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a bit extreme. Puts her through the ringer a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, is it a spoiler to say she gets dragged to hell?
I don't know that it is. I mean, the film's called
Fairly Obvious.
Drag Me to Hell. You know, it's one of those things. I do like the actress, Alison Lohman. I'm a bit of a fan of hers.
What's she been in?
Quite a few things, actually. I mean, look, the one that sticks in my mind is Matchstick Men, which also has Nicolas Cage and, what's his name, Sam Rockwell. And it's actually quite a good film, despite the fact it has Nicolas Cage in it.
And it's got Sam Rockwell in it, so...
He more than makes up for Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
So that's quite good. And she was in Gamer. And Beowulf. Gamer was a truly awful film. Beowulf I haven't seen.
Oh, Beowulf. Is this the weird CG Beowulf you're talking about?
Yeah.
It's not good.
No, it's meh.
It's Robert Zemeckis in The Uncanny Valley again, isn't it? And he doesn't seem to understand that concept. But it's a perfectly valid thing and very true, and I don't know why he keeps putting films in there. That's why I have trouble with the train film he did. What was that? Was it the Polar Express?
Oh, with Tom Hanks playing every character.
Weird. Yeah. Now, my mother loves that film, and she plays it for kids at school at Christmas, but it freaks me the fuck out.
Yeah.
Because it's...
There'll be kids 20 years in therapy going, she maybe watched Polar Express again.
It's weird, because they're nearly real, but not. And so, are you familiar with what the Uncanny Valley concept is?
Yes, it's a deep swoop into the Uncanny Valley.
And it's
I'm not.
You're not. Well, basically, you as a human being have an inbuilt instinct to recognize other humans that aren't well.
Okay.
And this is specifically built into you so that you will avoid dead people. Right? And it's an instinctual thing. It's been there for millions of years. And it's a beneficial... Yeah. It's, you know, you understand that what a dead person is. And you instinctually know the difference between a living person and a dead person beyond the obvious, you know?
Right.
And so what you have is, if a human being looks like a human but not quite right, it is naturally repulsive to you.
Right.
And so the trouble with animation is, if it's sort of hand-drawn cartoony animation, you're fine with that.
Yeah.
But the closer it gets to being almost photorealistic without quite being it, that it messes with you, and you actually find it repulsive and can't enjoy looking at it.
Because I thought I was missing something if there are dead people walking around and I'm supposed to be telling the difference between them, because I'm wondering if mine was broken.
Yeah, no, you
did I miss the zombie apocalypse? I thought I was ready, but clearly not.
Well, do you know what? The zombie genre sort of plays on that a great deal. And that's what causes it. So you can do animation that looks nothing like real humans, like The Simpsons or most Disney things or whatever. It's the reason why in Pixar films, humans aren't really right as humans. You know, you don't watch The Incredibles and think and get this same effect, because they're far more cartoony. Whereas with Polar Express, they try and make it as real as possible, but it's not real enough. And so mentally, you just reject it. And it's actually why also in the Steven Spielberg Tintin film, it's why all the characters have exaggerated features on their faces. So they all have big noses and things like that. Because it's just enough to drag you back out of that area and into accepting the cartoony kind of aspect of it. Whereas if they pushed it and tried to do it as well as they could, they'd screw with your head and you couldn't get on with it. So that's the Uncanny Valley thing. It has a Wikipedia page, I believe.
I've never heard of that expression. How weird.
Yeah,
You've never heard of it?
No!
It has a very good page, I think, on TV Tropes as well. That's a good read.
Okay. Educating Boz.
It says, the Uncanny Valley is a hypothesis in the field of human aesthetics which holds that when human features look and move almost but not exactly like natural human beings, it causes a response of revulsion among human observers. Examples can be found in the fields of robotics, 3D computer animation, and in medical fields such as burn reconstruction, infectious diseases, neurological conditions, and plastic surgery. So there you go. It's quite a weird thing. And there is a graph that goes along with it that can show you when you're in that zone.
Yeah, it's like a big bell curve type graph. Yeah.
And so it's, it's weird.
Where I had no idea so much thought went into such things.
It's a real thing. It's all real. Not making any of it up.
That's why I couldn't ever live in Japan. Because everything there is cold, dead eyes.
Slightly racist? I don't know.
No!
It felt like it a little bit. I don't want to accuse you of anything.
I was talking about the many robots in Japan.
Oh, right, the robot. Not the Japanese people. That's no, fine then.
Not the Japanese. Look, please don't curse me. Somebody.
That's you don't want a Japanese curse, my God. If you're watching horror films, watch some Japanese curse. For real.
I've seen Ju-on.
Yeah, that scared the Jesus out of me. In fact, it wasn't Ju-on I watched. It was the remake. And the remake scared me. Which...
Yeah, I really like the remake of The Ring as well, actually. I think it's actually might be superior to the original.
I would agree with you that the remake of The Ring is superior to the original. And not...
Yeah, I mean, that bit like where she's observing it and then, you know, there's that fly on the screen kind of generates out of the video and she like picks it off and then the nosebleed. And I was,
it's pretty good effects.
I would say especially the second one, because I've seen the original of both, the first one and the second one, and you watch the second one thinking, what the is going on? I didn't have a clue what was happening throughout the entire film, and I had to watch the American one to go,
That's often the problem with Japanese horror. Very rarely, in fact, does it make sense.
That's the problem, and it's not a language barrier. I can see loads of films with subtitles, that's fine. But in terms of plot, it was, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
I just
watch Akira, for example.
Yeah.
I still don't understand that film.
I think
it's a classic.
I think it's maybe what puts me off, anime.
Mm.
I can't get my head around it. I just can't.
If you want to giggle and to try and really get your head around the culture and the genre, you want to watch Frankenstein Girl versus Vampire Girl.
What?
And it's a real thing.
Netflix is full of all these like giant tit zombie woman versus something or other. There are all these really extreme weird Japanese films.
Don't get mixed up with things like Strippers versus Werewolves, because that is just out and out terrible.
Oh, Chuck watched that the other day. What? A pile of shit.
Really bad. But you know, things like Tokyo Gore Police. If you want a real what the fuck moment, all I would say is I wouldn't smoke anything illegal and then try and watch that movie.
Right.
Not safe for life.
No.
NSFL.
We keep really going off subject from Drag Me to Hell. It's like, yeah,
really, although it's one of those films, it's like a good jumping off point, because no one really made a film like this for a lot of years. So that's why it's kind of interesting to talk about it in the context of all the other horror things as well. And as well, because like Laura said, it's a fairly predictable film. So really, that's why we keep sort of jumping off from other things, because in terms of the plot, it says it right there in the title. She gets dragged to hell after many awful things. The end.
And I think you are right that the genre had sort of gone into... I say the genre. The genre's always been there and it's always been churning stuff out. But so much of it is straight to DVD. There's so few that are cinema worthy. So the only things you're seeing come out at cinema are the big franchise films. And they're not the only horrors being made. You know, and in the background, you've got things like Switchblade Romance and Martyrs being made. And it's like they come in completely under the radar and are absolutely superior films. I mean, Martyrs is just up there for me as one of the best examples of what a horror film is. It's, you know, just an incredible movie. And like, until Gordon, my guy who started the Little Pod of Horrors, for those of you who don't know, the first show I did with him as co-host, he said, watch this film. I was like, oh my God. It picked me up, shook me around and threw me down again. I mean, just incredible movie, but I'd never heard of it.
No, I mean, that's it. I mean, like, you're dead right that a lot of horror's under the radar. I mean, as we're recording this, Fright Fest is about to kick off in London, which is like a 4-day horror extravaganza, and famously a lot of films which go on to do great shakes come out of this thing. So I mean, things like VHS, which is a pretty good movie, actually. I mean, the sequel is being I think premiered at Fright Fest
Friday this, night 9:50. I have tickets.
Ooh,
yeah
boy.
Yeah, boy.
I expect a full report Saturday. So, I mean, it's the amount, like, you're dead right, Boz, the amount of under the radar stuff, which is really vastly superior to the stuff we're seeing here. But really, these films kick a door open and get people talking and get new films commissioned, because they make money. This, I mean, looking at the Wikipedia page, this made 3 times its budget, you know, so... That's the thing with horror. It's cheap to make, makes a ton of cash. I mean, you know, things like Paranormal Activity was basically made for 50p in a packet of crisps.
It was.
And, you know, then made the GDP of some countries back.
Yeah, and Blair Witch.
Yeah,
I was going to say, did Blair Witch kind of kick off a modern era of horror films?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what I was about to say was that horror, like a lot of other things, other genres, I think is cyclical. You get you get a big thing and then that kicks off like a big movement, you know, like in the 80s with the slashers, with your Freddies, your Jasons and Halloween. That triumvirate of films kicked off the whole next generation of movies. And then when that kind of dies down, the next thing is the reaction against that, and we want to do something new, and that kicks off the next thing. So films like Drag Me to Hell, although they seem, you know, to a certain extent they're predictable, I think that they need to be made and they need to be seen, because they open the door to so many other things.
Absolutely. And I think Blair Witch has a bit to answer for, because If you look into it, we did a show on found footage movies. we maybe talked about 1/10 of them that are out there. There are so many. And I'm just like, I got to the point of saying, I am done with this now. I've had enough of found footage horror movies, blah, 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 blah. And then I watched VHS. And that took it to another level again. And Gordon's actually seen VHS 2 and wasn't that taken with it.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting to see if it's one of those where we fall out again.
But I mean, if you got things like VHS, but also, like we mentioned earlier, the Paranormal Activities. Paranormal Activity came out and, like, rocked the world, basically. And, you know, that whole found footage thing sort of got reinvigorated from that.
Yeah.
The whole fashion for ghost possession exorcism movies, which are basically keeping the contortionists in work at the moment.
Yes.
and the gymnasts. You can't move for those on Netflix. There's so many. And I think that, like you're saying, The Conjuring, which has made a gazillion quid, which I haven't seen yet, and I will watch in broad daylight some other time because it looks kind of terrifying. I think, you know, that's probably going to give another kick. And to be honest, I can see in a few years' time when the people who've grown up watching, like, you know, like we all did, watching things like Hostel and Saw and this entirely too young and then being influenced by it and then being inspired to write and make their own stuff. So, like, in I think about 7 years' time, once we're all sick to death of found footage and exorcisms and, you know, it splatter movies and this sort of thing, and you just like, I never want to watch another horror film again, something's going to come and give it another slap and move it on to the next thing.
Yeah, I do think that if you were to look at it, there's always been the tick over of horror films. But like you say, there is always something that comes along and creates a buzz. And so when the whole, you know, when Hollywood just decided to remake everything they'd ever made rather than thinking of any new ideas, and we've all spent a lot of time on our podcast slagging off this idea. You know, to hear that they were remaking Evil Dead initially was like, no, sacrilege. and I went into that movie so nervous, but they took horror to another notch in that film. And I'm hoping that that is actually going to be the start of the next, this is how you do it. Because if for no other reason, if you look at the opening scene of that movie at the cabin in the woods there, the way it's lit, shot, the cinematography is incredible. I mean, just a starter for 10. And then, you know, the tension, the pressure, the violence, the blood, the gore. I mean, everything else just, they ramped everything up, but they start at a point of, they made it really well.
Yeah.
And it looks incredible.
I mean, that's it. I think if you, fundamentally, I mean, this isn't always so true, but I think if you make a good thing, if you make a good product, which is made with love and skill and care, ultimately the audience that you want to watch it is going to find it and appreciate your film.
Yeah.
But I think, to be honest, the remake of Evil Dead has got a lot to thank Hostel and Saw for, because whatever you think of those franchises, they changed what was acceptable to see in mainstream cinema, I think. They changed the level of gore you're allowed to show, the intensity, the violence, the body horror, the language. I think it changed, like I say, I think it raised the bar as to what you were allowed to see in a cinema, especially talking about this from the UK, where we still have things banned in this country.
Yeah.
And we still have things which are being banned now.
What has been banned recently?
I think the latest thing, it was like this there's a Japanese film which was banned fairly recently, but God, I mean, because isn't a Serbian film was banned for a while, wasn't it? And now is available.
Human Centipede 2 was cut very, very heavily.
I thought Human Centipede 2 was brilliant.
Did you?
Yeah.
Really?
Really. Right.
But, see, I found no validation for that movie whatsoever.
But not necessarily the content of the film. I thought the way it was shot and the way it was made was genius. The overall look and feel of the movie was really very good. It was otherwise a shit film. I grant you that. But
don't do that to me.
if I directed that film, I'd have been very proud of myself.
Mm.
That's how I felt about that. The first one I haven't seen, I might watch at some point.
See, I really have absolutely no desire to watch either of those films at all. I really cannot. I just can't get my head around the point of them and the idea of it or anything.
Well, they're part of that horror genre that is, let's just show you something gross.
Yeah. I appreciate that, but
yeah, the film that's banned at the moment is a film called Grotesque, which I remember there was a episode of the Horror Etc. podcast about which was banned. But looking at this list, there's also a film banned in this country called My Daughter's a Cocksucker.
I'm on the same web page as you.
I'm just reading what it's about. Yeah, that's fine. You can keep that.
I don't want to watch that one anyway.
Those kind of films have always been being made. You know, Necromantic is still illegal in this country. You know, that was made in the 70s. You've got the video nasty list. But then there's other things that aren't on that list because they're worse. They were made in Europe, usually in the 70s. And people go, oh, it's just getting so much worse with Hostel and Saw. And it's like, well, no, because worse has been done already. Okay, the effects aren't as good, but...
It's becoming mainstream. These films are, you don't really know about them unless you read up about them and you know about the genre. So I know about these films because I found them on a list of banned films, but I know about Saw and I know about Hostel and I know about those other films because they're there being sort of, you know, advertised to me all the time and they are very violent.
But the reason they crossed that boundary and made that level of violence acceptable in the cinema, and the reason the BBFC, which I do respect the BBFC and what they do, they let them through because it wasn't pointless. And this is where I struggle with Human Centipede 2. Human Centipede 1 is actually, it's not a good movie, but it's okay in concept because it's a shocking concept. But actually, once you get your head round the concept and the shock of that goes away, there's not much left for you.
Exactly. Why do it again?
Yeah, exactly. So what he did is he tried to ramp it up with the second one, but he did it just to be controversial, to make a scene, to be talked about, basically. And there's not much artistic merit beyond the way it's shot to it. I mean, a lot of people would argue with me on that, I think. But there is this whole... If you look at Hostel, it's got a really... It has characters that you sort of care about, I guess. And because you sort of care about them, you care about the catharsis and what happens at the end. So there's a through line, there's a storyline, and they are good stories. The Saw franchise, okay, not everybody wants to watch traps where people get killed in many ingenious ways. We happen to quite like that, and it's like, that's cool, I never thought of that one. But there's a story thread through all those movies, which is bloody complicated.
Yeah.
So it's like they do have plot and they do have purpose and they are going somewhere. But if you just make a Serbian film, you just have to be banned because what are you trying to say about your country? I'm sorry, you don't have a point to make as far as I'm concerned, if that's the way you want to make it.
Well, I mean, I'll just read out the rationale for Grotesque being banned. It's BBFC director David Cook explained, unlike other recent torture-themed horror works, such as the Saw or Hostel series, Grotesque features minimal narrative or character development, presents the audience with little more than an unrelenting and escalating scenario of humiliation, brutality and sadism.
Yeah.
So that's the rationale behind that being disallowed in the UK.
Yeah, because it doesn't have... It's just... It's shocking for shocking's sake. And especially where a Serbian film gets it very wrong, is I've always said, when you cross the line between horror and sexual horror and you start to muddy the two, that's where things get very shaky and very dodgy, and you lose me at that point.
I didn't mean to interrupt you at all then. Please continue.
Now, what I was going to say is we all love boobs in a horror movie because it's part of the genre. Anybody who's heard of the boobometer will realise that it's very much a big part of
I love horror. Holden saying boobies.
Yes, yeah, it's just brilliant with his accent. But of course, you want it so that when the boobies come out, you all go, hey! Or no, you can't have sex, you'll die. You know, those kind of tropes are fine. But when it starts to get really fucking creepy with it, it's like, no, we don't cross that line. That's where I draw the line, really.
Yeah, I agree with you. I can watch a certain amount of violence. Well, I can have it in front of me with my fingers over my eyes, sort of half watching it. But once it starts getting sort of sexual, I don't want to see that. I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, I find that extraordinarily difficult to watch. Yeah, and it has been the cause of me turning films off before.
Yeah,
you wouldn't like spit on your grave, is the film.
No, you wouldn't.
No, don't ever watch that Wikipedia page and went, well, that's a film I'm never going to see.
I would never recommend that anybody watch that film. It was a piece of shit from beginning to end. I don't have enough bad words to say about a Serbian film.
Me either. I totally agree with you on that.
It's the one film that Mark Kermode and I, Mark Kermode, agree on. That it's just an unwatchable piece of shit. And it tries, you know, on the Blu-ray, which I'm lucky enough to have downstairs.
Oh my God.
It was sent to me. I did not willingly buy it. I did watch it because I didn't know anything about it. On there, you've got the director trying to justify all the stuff that he's put in there. And you just think...
And I bet he can't, can he?
No, well, his justification is it's a metaphor for communism.
Bullshit.
Yeah, that was my response.
It's
it was you just thought
of
the most foul, offensive things you can possibly think of, and you filmed them. Yeah. And it's honestly some of the most fucked up shit I have ever looked at in a film.
Mm. But you see, some of it's been done before in the 70s. It's banned still. But things, I Spit on Your Grave, which, you know, was banned for years. It just... I had a friend who was working his way through the video nasties, and whenever he got one, he was like, come around and watch this. And this is how I got into the more extreme end of horror, because it was like a mission for him. If it was banned, he wanted it, which is how I've seen so much of this stuff. And he put this on, and I'm like, you're just watching this woman get raped over and over again. And I'm like, why do you want to watch this? This is, and another thing, why is this considered a horror movie? Oh, because she kills them all later. And it's like, well, what's the point of this movie then?
Yeah.
I would recommend very highly, if any of you guys haven't seen it, there's a Video Nasties like documentary box set. It's like three discs. It's I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it's absolutely brilliant. And it's basically all about everything you want to know about Video Nasties. And there's a very good, it's basically got a disc as well of every single trailer. And then they talk about the trailers and the films. It's pretty excruciating detail in some cases. It's really an excellent, excellent watch. I think if you just sort of go on Amazon and Google Video Nasties DVD, you'll probably find it.
It's going on my Christmas list.
Cool. Well,
it dragged me to hell.
Well, I was just going to call time on this show and say let's end it here, because we've been going about an hour and we've almost touched on Drag Me to Hell. But I agree with what Emma says, that it is essentially, it's difficult to talk about the one film in particular, because it gives you a jumping off point for so many other things. And essentially, this is just a good horror film. And without just going through it frame by frame and telling you why it's a good horror film, it's better that you just go and watch it, because and there are so many things that are based on you not knowing what's coming up that it's very difficult to go into detail about it without totally ruining it for you, because as Emma says, there's no doubt this is a film about somebody being dragged to hell. It's the clue's in the name, but
it's not called She Has a Bad Day and then it all gets better and she goes has a lovely cup of tea.
Yeah, no,
she gets dragged to hell.
Yeah. The poster image gives it away a little bit as well.
Yeah. And so, Boz,
that thing is called Video Nasties: The Definitive Guide.
Okay, thank you. I'll look it up.
But it's so we can't discuss the journey that she takes to be dragged to hell, which you will know is going to happen anyway. So, you know, it's better to use films like this as a jumping off point. I actually think horror kind of falls into the same category as comedy, that it's difficult to talk about
subjective.
In detail.
Mm. Yeah. It's so subjective. Either it works for you or it doesn't. I mean, I think if we, you know, next time we're sitting down in a pub and we go around the table and say, right, what is your favourite horror film, and justify yourself?
Yeah.
We're going to have four entirely different answers, and the other three will probably massively disagree with our choice.
Yeah, it's, and somebody will say Paranorman.
And it's the same with comedy, I think, like you say, Rich.
Mm. Yeah. So, in conclusion, then, it's time to give the film a score out of 5. So, let's, if we just go in the order that we started in, Boz, what do you want to give this film out of 5?
I'm going to give it 4. And that's on a horror film scale, which is mostly what I watch. So, it's a 4-star horror movie.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Emma?
3.
That's a fine score. And Laura?
I'm going to go with a 3 as well.
Really? Oh. Wow.
Yeah. I didn't think it was terrible. I thought it was all right. And it was funny. I just didn't think it was a particularly horrible horror film. So, yeah, I'll give it a 3.
Yeah, I think if you watch it again in a couple of years when you're not trying to eat your dinner, yeah, you might enjoy it more.
Yeah. Have a few drinks first, then watch
it. Yeah, have a couple of beers. Love it a bit.
Well, I'm going to give it 4 as well, because I kind of feel like, as horror films go, this is one I'd recommend.
Hmm.
And that's got to be worth... It's at least a 3, because it's a decent enough film. It's not a bad film in any way. It's not going to bother you if you watch it, well, unless you're eating. But
or you have a big problem with Justin Long.
Or yeah, that's the other thing. But I do feel that because it's so good within its own genre, it's worth that extra point. It's certainly not a 5, because it's not like a significant
It's not like
film.
Drive.
Yeah. We'll not get
Martyrs
into that.
Is a 5.
But yeah, so I think 4, which gives this film a score of 14 and makes it a movie you should see.
Yay!
Which I think is totally fine and reasonable. That's cool. That's good. I'm just trying to find the ratings. Here we go. 14. It puts it slightly not as good as Big Lebowski or Jackie Brown. Have we got something that got a 14? No, this might be the worst film we've reviewed. No, Rounders. It's the worst film.
Suck it, Casey.
And then,
what's the cutoff for a movie you should see? Is it 12?
It's 12. So in fact,
and there's
out
only
of,
4 of us.
Well, no, there's only 4 scores for all of them.
Oh right, okay.
It's just what we've decided to do, or what I've decided to do, is basically just have 3 other people and me on because it got a bit crowded before.
Mm.
With sort of 5 voices, so I'm gonna watch I've seen this and I'm gonna give it a score, and I think 14's about right. That sounds fair. It is a film you should see. Rounders, yeah. Apparently not. But
not so much.
Yeah. So sorry, Casey. Sorry. So there we go. So that's the end of our show. If you want to email us about anything, and please do, because I love feedback. Feedback is awesome. So email us at moviesyoushouldsee@simplysyndicated.com or go onto the website and just click the Contact Us button, and there's a little form you can use, and it sends me an email. We've also got, if you want to hear the previous 200 and... God, how many is it episodes of Movies You Should See? They're all online as part of Simply Everything, which you just sign up for, and it's our streaming service. You also get a crap ton of other stuff that is only available on Simply Everything, like Make It So and My Show, which I've just done with Tristan. And we just started doing Shaken Not Stirred, which is a show with me and Nick on the Bond films, which are all good.
I had the first one. It's good.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. It's...
Yep, very good.
And coming soon... The greatest show in the galaxy.
Yeah, yeah.
With Emma.
Yeah.
Simply Syndicated's first attempt at Doctor Who podcasting, which I have so much faith in. I think it's awesome. So, well, no, because I'm nothing to do with it. I'm not on it. That's the good thing. So it can be good. And so that's coming soon.
I feel no pressure about this whatsoever.
Oh,
she
it's
lied.
Fine.
You'll nail it, Em.
It's fine, honestly. It's fine. I've got an email to send you about that all in a bit. Don't worry.
Uh-oh.
No, all good. Everything's good.
Don't,
really, come on. You don't need to worry about anything.
That's true.
I'm a happy, friendly, carefree kind of guy. I'm not going to get upset about stuff. As I said earlier,
right,
look, I record podcasts with Michael Storer. Yeah. My podcast was bad. I will drag you to hell.
Say, if you find a button missing off your coat after the weekend.
I was going to say that.
Awesome. Well, I'm not going to wear a coat with buttons.
You should
wear
a creepy contact lens.
Yeah, just go around him all the time.
What would the gypsy have done if she had like a zip-up jacket on? Exactly.
These and more questions.
You'd have stolen her iPhone.
That's yeah. it. Your
or ripped
iPhone.
Some of her hair out or something creepy like that.
iPhones she don't send out, people to hell. They save people from it. That's what iPhones do. Don't get me started.
Well, my iPhone might be sending me to hell because my thumb is basically bent into an L shape from playing Plants vs. Zombies 2 for hours and hours and hours.
I haven't downloaded it yet. I'm saving it for the weekend because I've got a 5-hour train journey.
Yeah, electro crack.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
Awesome. Well,
I went and there's okay, okay. Sorry, my bad. Carry on.
Well, so
we'll waffle when we finish the show.
Yeah, waffle in a bit. So thank you for listening, everybody. We'll be back later with another episode, and don't forget to check out. I think we'll have further episodes already available for you on Simply Everything, which is another reason to sign up for it. And I think I see all of you at the weekend.
You will.
Yep.
Yay.
Awesome.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks to Boz and Lavinia. Thank you.
That's brilliant. I'll be the really drunk one. That's
me
my
too.
Plan. Yeah.
Vanilla Delights, mate, all day.
All day. There we go.
I'll take a thermos full of it in the car. Watch out, Boz.
It's going to be messy.
You have to make some mixtape as well.
Oh, my God. Don't just say things like that. Mixtapes take a long time to do properly. You can't just say things like that.
We've got a playlist. Who does mixtapes? What is that? Mixtapes.
Well, I don't know what kind of audio system we're going to have because I'm hiring a car. So it's like, but we'll think of something.
Box. We can just duct tape it to the dashboard if you like.
Yeah, old school.
What time are you planning to get to Leeds? Because I really want to see you drive into Leeds city centre with a boombox strapped to the front of the car,
doing donuts in the car park.
Oh, I can't wait. Right, I'm ending the show. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.